So I'd like to start off our sermon this morning with a very big Happy New Year. Whether or not you realized it, I hope you did, the calendar has once again changed. And this is the very first Sunday of a brand new year. And first Sundays of the new year are always kind of fun because somehow in the back of our mind, we see it as a sense of renewal. We see the changing of that calendar, the fact that if some one simple digit changes from a 7 to an 8, somehow we think the slate is all clean and we're all good and we all start over. And man, okay, this year is going to be different. So what do we usually do? Well, we try to start off our year differently by we make New Year's resolutions. Things that we're going to do this year, things that we're going to change this year, things that are going to make this year better than last year. And let's be very honest, usually by February we decide, yeah, that resolution is not going to work out the way I thought it would be. And usually by the end of the first quarter, things are settling back in, and usually somewhere around the middle of the year we start thinking, well, there's always next year. And you might think, wow, that's kind of depressing. Well, I don't mean it to be, because at Parkview Christian Church, I am hoping that if our calendar turns from 17 to 18, that it truly is going to be a different kind of year. And not a different kind of year because of some resolution that we made or something that we're going to do. It's because I'm going to hopefully help us change our mindset and the way that we think about church. Now, did you notice it didn't go away? Off to our left. This is not an altar. If you weren't here last week and you're wondering what this is, anybody that was here could explain it to you, but I am going to go ahead and give you a big synopsis, a big summary here. This is our reminder that we're done with the islands. We're done with the way that things used to work. In other words, we understand if we're going to do things differently, then we can't do things the same. That makes logical sense, doesn't it? If you're going to do things differently, then you can't do things the same. Something just has to change. Now, what's not going to change? I told you last week, this does not change. This is still how we at Parkview see that we are going to help people become a Christian. And by that term, I want to define that term, have a relationship with Christ. Not through some ritual process. This is the process that every single one of us at some point in our life, if we're a follower of Christ, we started out in the community, no relationship with Christ. We started coming and we got involved in the crowd, kind of sitting back anonymously and just kind of sitting there and learning and listening. And it just kind of got there, so we stayed there for a while. And then eventually we said, you know what, this thing, I want to know a little bit more about it. So we started maybe attending a Bible study, or we started attending something that was a little, getting a little more connected with the church, getting a little more involved. And then as we became more connected, eventually we had this aha moment, this light bulb turned on. We're like, wow. This isn't about something that I do. This isn't a religion. This is about a relationship. And we know that any relationship takes that last step. You have to have a commitment. So that does not change. We still want to start in the community and move people toward a committed relationship. I also warned you, it does not change how we think we move people from one place to the other. Okay? Picking up right where we left off last week, we believe still that the way you meet people from a community to a crowd, from a crowd to the connected to the committed, is that one, they see us serving. We serve God with all of our heart. We honor God in our worship. Whatever we do here on Sunday morning that we call worship, we make sure that it is not me-focused, it is God-focused. We invite others to come. We notice the needs of others and meet them. And we encourage people in our walk, both those inside the church and those outside the church. But this year, two of these kind of take special emphasis. This idea of inviting others to come and noticing the needs of others, and that second part of it, and meeting them. This is something that our church has to begin to focus on. We have to begin to realize that the only way that you ever harvest a crop is, well, you have to plant a field. The only way that you're ever really going to change the world is you have to change it one person at a time, and that is we have to get involved in people's lives, and that means we're going to have to invite others to come, which means we have to have events and things that we have to invite people to. And it means that we're going to have to look into people's lives, much like the ladies thing, and I call it a ladies thing because this came from the ladies ministry that started it, but much like this idea that we want to notice people's lives and say, you know what? I can help. There is something I can do about it. And as we begin to take that mentality, as this becomes our focus, we're going to change. Not because we have some method or some formula for change, because there is a reality about change. Change is the only constant in the entire world. I cannot tell you when it starts, and I cannot tell you when it ends. It is ever going, and that is just the way things work. So as we start out this year, we are going to do what I am going to call a little crude theology. Now, I understand you hear that. Let's talk about the two words that make up this idea of crude theology. First of all, let's talk about the word crude. Now, I'm not talking about crude humor. I'm talking about the actual definition of the word crude is constructed in a rudimentary or makeshift way, simple or basic. So nothing that we want to talk about, nothing that we want to do, we don't want this to be overly complicated. We want this to be something that everybody can understand. We want it to be to a level that when I'm walking down the street and I see the theology of the church, then it's something that I can apply to my life right here and then. So that brings us to the other big churchy word, theology. Theology is simply the study of the nature of God or a religious belief. Theology is just something that focuses on God. So when we talk about crude theology, we're really talking about a simple, basic theology that begins to help people understand what it means to be a Christian. What am I really talking about? This term. Evolving faith. Okay, go ahead. He's going to talk about evolution. No, I'm not. Okay, but I am going to talk about evolving faith. Now, you hear that term and you're probably thinking, what does that mean? Well, you understand while we think of evolving as, you know, froggy becomes fish or other, whichever way it goes, the part that doesn't really work in natural science. When we want to tie it to that word, evolving just means that it's constantly in flux. And Paul talks about this idea of evolving faith when he goes over to Philippians chapter 2, verse 12. It says, therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation in fear and trembling. So when you begin to look at Philippians, when you begin to look at this verse, Paul starts out by saying, you began this walk because I was there. You were obeying me. And then as I stepped away, you began to, well, obey because it's what you thought you were supposed to do. But now there is this other step that I want you to take that goes beyond just obeying rules.
With every sun comes a new day, a new beginning, a hope that things will be better today than they were yesterday. But not for me. My name's Eep, and this is my family. The Crudes. If you weren't clued in already by the animal skins and sloping foreheads, we're cavemen. Oh. Most days we spend in our cave. In the dark. Night after night. Day after day. Yep. Home sweet home. When we did go out, we struggled to find food in a harsh and hostile world. And I struggled to survive my family. We were the last ones around. There used to be neighbors. The Gorts, smashed by a mammoth. The Horks, swallowed by a sand snake. The Urks, mosquito bites. Throgs, common cold. And the Croods, that's us. The Croods made it because of my dad. He was strong, and he followed the rules. The ones painted on the cave walls. Anything new is bad. Curiosity is bad. Going out at night is bad. Basically, anything fun is bad. Welcome to my world. But this is a story about how all that changed in an instant. Because what we didn't know was that our world was about to come to an end. And there were no rules on our cave walls to prepare us for that.
So, before anybody comes up and tells me on the front of the bulletin I misspelled the word crude, I did not. It's spelled exactly like I meant to spell it. And yes, in case you haven't figured out, we are continuing the journey. You can kind of think of this as part two to the series that we closed out at the end of the year last year. Where last year we had that theme of the island going behind us and the boat versus the island. And we had this idea going that was the what. What needed to happen was that we need to leave the idea of the islands behind. That was the what. So now it's not very fair for me to tell you the what and not include the how do we do it. How do we go about putting that kind of theology, that idea of islands, that mentality, how do we begin to put it behind us? And I do realize I am pushing the envelope even further than I usually push it because I brought a bunch of cave people into church, but that's okay. You'll understand what we're doing as we're going along. And by the way, I would like to say I am not calling anybody here a caveman, okay? I am not trying to insult anybody, but I am trying to bring forward a point in the fact that as you begin to look at that, you understand the creeds were about one thing. In the beginning, they were about survival. They were about making sure that in their harsh world where they had watched all the other people around them fall, in this harsh world that where they struggled just to find food, the creeds had found a way to survive. And how did they survive? Well, they spent their time inside of a cave with a rock pool in front of them, living in the dark, because they knew once they went outside the cave, it was a dangerous world out there. And then they started to make sure the kids got, because, you know, Daddy and Mama Crew can't live forever. So they decided that they were going to start putting paintings on the cave wall. Rules. Things that you shouldn't do. And I find it interesting that the younger cave girl that was in there began to look at these rules, and she didn't see them the way that Dad saw them. She saw them as anything that was fun was bad, and anything that was not fun was what the rules were. And when you begin to think about rules, and you begin to think about how we treat rules, and it's really what we try to tell people is, well, don't experience, just do. Now, I understand this philosophy. I have two kids, and I am constantly telling them, do this, do that, do the other. And we do have rules in our house, and so I understand that the idea behind this idea of don't experience, just do, is something that we propagate in our society. But you need to understand there is a problem when this becomes the philosophy of a church. And here's the problem. There is no growth. Now, I want you to think back through your life. All right? And a lot of you, that's a lot of thinking because you've been here a while. But I want you to think back through your life. And if you go back and you think about how you learn things, be honest. Did you learn them by somebody explaining it to you? Or did you learn it by pressing up against the rule and figuring out that the person that was explaining it to you was right? Let me just give you the simple one. The stove is hot. Did you learn the stove is hot by letting somebody tell you the stove is hot, even though I'm sure somebody, or did you eventually, when nobody was looking, and you thought nobody was out there, and nobody was ever going to fuss at you, did you just have to find out what hot was for yourself? That's the way it works. And you know, I have a lot of things that run through my head because, you know, there's a difference between wisdom and knowledge. Wisdom is the ability to learn from somebody else's mistakes. Knowledge is when you have to learn from your own. And I have a lot of knowledge because I did a lot of things as kids that I pushed the boundaries and I grew because I experienced. And so this idea that everything is about just do it and don't worry about why we do it, just do it because it's what it's written on the cave wall, because it's what we say you should do. Understand eventually, if we're really going to grow, the people out there, they're experiencing. The other thing is it's contrary to human nature. This idea of do and not experience is actually against the creation of God. You see, animals work off of instinct. People not so much. I mean, there is no instinct in the world that makes it sound like a sane idea for a bus to be moving and some kid to say, I think I'll jump off of it. That's not a sane thing. But I do know a kid that's done that before. Okay, and it was just moving along and somebody said, I bet you won't jump off the bus. I'm like, you want to make a bet? Sure. So off the bus, this kid jumped. I know it existed because I'm the kid. Okay, so we have this moment. It is against our human nature. When God created us, he said, let us create man in our own image. And that means a lot of things because we have free will, but it also means that we have a curiosity. See, there is this idea that God could have made this very easy and not made a tree of the knowledge of good and evil, right? He could have just done away with that, and all the things would have been good because the man could have just done. But that's not what God did. He made the tree because then he gave us a choice, and in giving us a choice, he was actually feeding into the very nature that is his own nature and the fact that we have a choice in how we live our life. And so this idea that all I'm going to ever do is I'm never supposed to understand, I'm never supposed to experience, then I have to understand that that is against how God put me together. I'm a curious person. You tell me this is the way it has to be, you know my first question, why? You know, I'm the kid that when you put it there and said, this is how it works, I'm like, I bet it isn't. And you take it apart and you figure out, yeah, that was how it worked. And I don't know how to get it back together, but I have to understand what makes things work. And so that is just human nature. And here's the other thing that we need to remember. Sometimes when all you have is rules, it just gets old, does it not? It just gets to this point that things are just kind of bleh. I mean, I've been following the exact same rules my entire life, and eventually I just get tired of people telling me, follow the rules. Follow the rules and it'll all be good, because we follow the rules and we find out that life is still hard and life is still difficult and the world is still a dangerous place. And so this idea of following just the rules, that our faith is based on just a set of rules, it's not going to work. As a matter of fact, I do need you to understand that we don't just throw the rules out. Now, I know a lot of people that have gone the complete other swing. Well, we don't want to have the rules. So we just want to have this open faith where everything is all good. Well, that's not where we're headed either. Jesus gives us lots of examples that he wants us to follow the rules. Let me give you a few verses. John 14:21 says, whoever has my commands and keeps them is the one who loves me. The one who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love them and show myself to them. John 15:10. If you keep my commands, there's more rules, you will remain in my love, and just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. 1 John 2:3. We know that we have come to know him, for we keep his commands. 1 John 5:3. In fact, this is love for God, to keep his commands, and his commands are not burdensome. So understand that belief, this idea that it's not all about the rules, this is not all about throwing the rule book out either. Because we want to see that we aren't throwing them out, that rules have some importance to them. And I skipped my principle of faith. Let me back up for a minute. Principle of faith one, faith is not just about following the rules. It has to be more to it. I know that's a blank. I know if I don't put it in there, somebody's going to say, you missed the blank. It's in there. It's not just about following the rules. But it also means rules have some importance. Rules are there to keep us safe. You ever notice there's a tag on your mattress? I've always wondered, did the mattress police really come if you pull it off? I've just always wondered that. There is this idea that they put warning labels on things. They put warning labels on cigarettes, and they put warning labels on coffee these days. They put warning labels on medicines and drugs and everything else. And you know why the warning labels are there, right? To give you the safety factor. In other words, I am going to tell you, if you exceed this, then what you are doing is unsafe. See, they're rules, but you understand how the rules got developed, right? Somebody else experienced the bad side of it. Somebody else spilt the coffee on themselves and said, that's really hot. So now McDonald's says, now I have to say, yeah, the coffee is hot. Don't spill it on yourself. I mean, that's just the way it works. And so rules are important because they do keep us safe. Rules give us structure. I'm a big football fan. Could you imagine what a football game would look like with no rules? It would look very chaotic, would it not? I mean, you wouldn't know when a first down is. How many times do you get to move the ball before you have to give it to the other team? And eventually what you would have is a bunch of grown men fighting over a little ball about this big, and it would be hilarious to watch, but structure is important. We have rules within inside of our church that give us structure. We don't come here and everybody picks up a hymnal or picks out their favorite song and we all try to sing a different song at the same time. While that might be interesting one Sunday to try, we do understand that we have a corporate worship, and so we try to put some structure to our worship so that we can all lift our voices together. It's important that we understand rules provide something good in the form of structure. Rules can provide guidance. Think about a map. I mean, okay, think about a GPS at these days, because I don't know how many of us actually use. I wonder if the market for folding maps has gone away very much. Because that industry kind of has been impacted, because who needs a folding map when the thing will just talk to me and tell me when to turn left or right? But understand all of those instructions that it's giving me, a GPS is giving me, or that map that was laid out, somebody had to go there to draw that map. So somebody had to experience, take their experiences and put them into a map so that I know what is the safest route or the quickest route or the less traffic route if you're using a GPS. I know which way to go because there are rules about the road that tell me left, right, up, down, in, out, over, under. And it tells us, gives us some guidance in which way we're supposed to go. Rules can teach us. Yep, they sure can. I mean, when God took Moses to the side, he gave him those 10 simple commandments. The idea was that Moses was going to put these rules out there, and that was only 10, but they were supposed to teach the people not how to be good. You do understand the purpose of the Ten Commandments was to realize, was to teach the people that they couldn't even live up to the most simple standard. The idea behind the Ten Commandments wasn't so the Israelites could live perfect. The idea behind the Ten Commandments was to show the Israelites that this is not going to work this way. You can't just do the rules and expect the relationship with God to work. The purpose was to teach the Israelites an important concept underneath the rules, that there's got to be something more than just the rules. So rules are important. I'm not saying that we just need to throw it all out, but you do understand when we become about just rules, just decay paintings on the wall, then some things begin to happen to us that begin to force us back onto our islands. And the first thing is, they become stumbling. This is what Romans chapter 14, verse 13 says. Therefore, let us stop passing judgment on one another. Instead, make up your mind not to put out any stumbling block or obstacle in the way of a brother or a sister. So often, here's the way it works. We have rules. We have the paintings that are on the wall. We have the things that we've been taught ever since we were little, ever since we were knee-high to a grasshopper. My mom uses that phrase. But every time we were really little, we were taught this is how church is supposed to be done. And the problem is then when somebody comes in and church is done a little bit different than what we usually start doing, well, that's not how we do things here. That's not the way that's not what was painted on our cave walls. And so then what begins to happen is we begin to put stumbling blocks in their way. We begin to complain. We begin to look at that person and say, well, you can't do it that way here. And eventually we have a division between our church. And it really isn't about anything that has to do with faith. It has to do with a set of rules that really, honestly, most of us don't know how to keep our own ways. And so this idea of a stumbling block, putting it in the way, it says that we need to stop passing judgment. Just because our rules don't always match up with somebody else's rule, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're wrong. Because really the only rule that matters is God's rule. We'll talk about that in just a moment. So the next thing that begins to happen as we begin to focus more on our rules is we begin to segregate ourselves. A verse that we're very familiar with, Luke chapter 5, verse 30 says, but the Pharisees, now remember who a Pharisee is. A Pharisee was a religious leader. He was a person that had perfected the idea of living by a bunch of rules. Sort of. But not only the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. So these are the people that knew the legal, they knew the law of God, they knew the law of Moses. They had studied Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy. They had probably memorized it at this point. They had every I dotted and every T crossed. And so these people were there. And it says the teachers of the law who belonged to the sect complained to his disciples. I always find this funny. They didn't go complain to Jesus, because that usually never ended up with anybody. But they began to complain amongst the disciples, and they said, why do you disciples, eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Now you do realize what they were saying in that statement, right? It's the unsaid thing there. You're eating with tax collectors and sinners, not us. Because guess what we're not? We're not tax collectors or sinners. And why are we not those people? Well, because we follow the rules. And so since we follow the rules and you're not eating with us, then obviously you're not eating with the right kind of people, because they and us, well, you see the words that's coming up there, right? It's an us and them mentality that begins to form over what? Over the rules. Not over faith. Not over God. Not over Jesus. They're just simply looking at these people and saying, well, they don't follow the rules. Why are you eating with them? But again, they're not asking Jesus this question, because Jesus would have a very pointed answer for them. We'll get to it in just a moment. So we begin to segregate ourselves. We begin to actually separate ourselves from the very people we're trying to reach. We look at them and say, well, we can't associate with them because they're not part of the church. Exactly. That's the point. That's the entire point of the church, is to associate ourselves with other people that are not part of the church, not to teach them some set of rules, but the hope is, and I'm going to use this word very pointedly, is to infect them with our faith. And for that, our faith has to evolve a little bit beyond just living by a set of rules. Because, let's be honest, how many of us are keeping the rules? If we took the Ten Commandment test, how would you score these days? You think you'd get a 10 out of 10? I might get a passing grade of about a 70. Let's be realistic. Most of us probably get a 30 or 40. And that's just the way it works. So we're trying to have the world live to a set of rules that I can't even live to. And then because they can't live to the rules as I see fit, we begin to pull ourselves away from them. See how that forces us back to our island? It's not a good way to be. And then the most dangerous thing happens. We begin to add our rules to God's rules. Oh, we'd never do this, would we? Well, listen to Mark chapter 7, verse 5. So the Pharisees and teachers of the law, here they are again, asked Jesus. Well, at least they're going to the right point at this point in time. They're going to the right person. They're saying, okay, Jesus, your why don't your disciples live according to, and listen to the word, the traditions of the elders? Notice they didn't say, why aren't your disciples following the Ten Commandments? Why aren't your disciples following some godly rules? No, what does it say? Why aren't they following, really what it says, our traditions? The things that we hold important. Instead of eating their food with defiled hands, and again, we have talked about this scripture in the past, this is not the disciples were coming to the table with dirty hands, okay? There was actually a ritualistic ceremony as Jewish people that you were supposed to go through, where you not only washed your hands, but you were supposed to wash your hands, believe it or not, all the way up to your elbow. Okay? And there was this ritualistic ceremony that you were supposed to go through before you came and sat at the dinner table. Now, I'll be honest with you, at my house, I'm happy with soap and water. Okay? Because you just want people to stop and wash their hands before they come to the table. And we have to remind people sometimes, go wash your hands before you come to the table. So it's just the way it works. But they had got to the point, they weren't so concerned about the health factor. What were they concerned about? The tradition. The fact that there was this new rabbi in town, this new teacher in town, and the fact that his disciples were not paying attention to the traditions, they began to say, wait a minute, you're not paying attention to the rules. You're not paying attention to the important stuff. And, you know, Jesus' answer to him then was not a very polite one, because basically the traditions, they are what they are. I didn't come here for the traditions. I came here for something much more valuable than a tradition. I came to redeem the world. I came to save it, not to just teach it a bunch of new rules. How easy would it have been for Jesus just to come and have a bunch of new list of rules and regulations and become a rabbi that way? But that's not what he did. So here's the other thing that begins to happen as we deal with this idea of just the rules. We allow our rules to become the very standard. Now, this is what it says in Matthew chapter 5:20. For I tell you that unless the righteous surpass that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, you do realize these Pharisees and these teachers of the law all believed that they were heaven bound because they kept the rules. And here is Jesus saying, unless your faith evolves beyond just the rules, don't miss that, because that is exactly what he's saying. Unless your faith evolves to something besides just keeping the rules, then the idea of the kingdom of heaven is outside of your grasp. Let your mind wrap around that for a second. If all your faith is just a set of rules and regulations, then Jesus is saying it is time for you to take the very next step. Something beyond just living by a very specific set of rules. And as long as I do this and do that, don't do this and don't do that, then when I get to the end, if there's going to be some scale, we've talked about this scale before, where God's going to put all of my good stuff on one side and all of my bad stuff on the other side. And as long as it tips to the good or stay even, Jesus is going to go, understand, it's not about what you do, it's about who you know. Understand, it's not about the rules. As a matter of fact, how do I know it's about the rules? All right, here's your trivia question for the day. How many rules did Jesus give? Wow, I'm impressed. He gave exactly two. Two, only two. So God gave 10 to the Israelites, but Jesus gave two. And when we talk about all those scriptures that we talked about, keep my commands, keep my commands, keep my commands, here's the commands. Very simple, is it not? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, I want you to see in that command, there's a lot of latitude. He says, love your God. How am I supposed to love my God? With everything I've got, all the way down to the very marrow in my bone, I am supposed to love my God with everything that is in me. But notice he doesn't say what I'm exactly supposed to do. Does he not? He doesn't say, if I love the Lord my God with all my heart, all my mind, all my strength, and all my heart, that I'll read my Bible 20 times a day. He didn't put a rule out there about, well, if you're going to do it this way, then you can only eat your food this way. He put no parameters around it whatsoever, did he? All he said is that we're supposed to have a passion for who God is. And that passion should translate into not a set of rules, but into a mentality that I am so in love with God, I am so in love with who Christ is, that he is the focal point of my life. Now, which is harder, living by the rules or changing the focus of your life? Remember the cup of water? I bet you had no idea this morning, Lori, that your story was going to get me that big part of the sermon. Remember the cup of water? When your focus doesn't, when you don't have the focus on the water, what did she see? All the problems in the church. When she had the focus on the water, she had something that was a focal point. All the problems in the church didn't matter because she had something to focus on. That's what this verse is saying. All the rules that are out there, they're okay. They provide some guidance. They provide some benefit. But if that's all your faith is about, then you're not loving God with all your heart. You're loving God with the minimum that you think you have to give. So that's what rules are all about. What's the minimum I have to do to meet the requirement so that I get a passing grade on the test? Because that's what I'm about. I'm about finding my way to heaven. And that's not what Jesus is saying here. He's saying, you have to make this a love affair with a person. And that person is Jesus. And then the other side of that is that as you begin to love God with all your heart, it's almost like he doesn't even take a breath. And by the way, then you're going to start loving your neighbor as yourself. Now, that's just going to be an overflow, right? Because as I begin to love God, I begin to love the things that he loves. And what did he love? People. How much did he love people? Enough to give his own life. See the way this works? There's this idea that we have a vertical and a horizontal relationship. The picture of the cross set right on top of our little islands. And the idea is that God doesn't necessarily want us just living by a bunch of rules and regulations. He wants us to be living by this idea that I'm here to love God with everything I've got. And you know what? As I love God with everything I've got, he can have everything that I have. And once he has everything that I have, then you know what? I'm going to be focused on the people that he wants me to reach. That's a big statement. That's the idea of evolving faith. I'm going to move away from the do's and don'ts. Not that we're going to throw the rule book out, but I'm going to become more focused on the love and the relationship. Two simple rules. And Jesus added an exclamation point after these two rules. He said, all the law. Now, you do understand, when he says all, he's not talking about 10 commandments. He's going back and he's actually throwing this up in the Pharisees' face. All of those volumes of law that you've written, which were based off of 10 simple commands, understand all of the law hangs on these two commands. I want you to think about the 10 commandments for a second. First six are all about loving God. The last four are all about loving people. See, he hasn't changed the mentality one bit. It's the same philosophy they taught in the Old Testament, the same philosophy that Jesus had, and the same philosophy that I'm asking this church to adopt. The idea that, you know what? I'm not here to tell you a bunch of rules and regulations. I'm really not. I'm really just more interested in the idea that we need to have a relationship with God in such a way that inspires us to reach people. Because the idea here is that crude faith, that very beginner faith, where did Paul start in Philippians? You started out just obeying. The beginning faith, yes, it's all about obedience. It's what we try to get out of our kids, right? We want our kids to obey because we understand eventually they're going to be out on their own, and then eventually they're going to have to not obey because mom and dad said so. They're going to have to obey because they believe it's the best thing also. And then as they begin to do that, their faith will grow. You see, crude faith just wants to follow the rules. I'm asking you to have something bigger. I'm asking you to understand the idea of evolving faith. A faith that doesn't just want to cross the things off the to-do list, but a faith that's interested in loving God with everything you've got. Nothing left off the table. If God wants it, he can have it. Notice when Jesus read that verse out, he covered your physical, he covered your mental, and he covered your emotional, and he covered your spiritual. He gave you everything. He said, I want it all. And then I want to take all and turn it toward people to reach them for Christ. That's impressive. That's evolving faith. That's the journey that will keep us off of the islands, because as long as I'm focused on those two rules, I can't go there. I can't go back to just doing things the way that I've always done them, because guess what? Jesus has got a bigger plan in mind. This morning, if you're here and you, maybe you don't even have the beginner steps down yet. Man, you've never accepted Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. And I'd like to let you know, I do understand what it means to have a new relationship with Christ. And I invite you, when we do our time of decision, you can come forward and you know what? We'll sit down and we'll turn the page of the scripture with you. Show you what it means to have a relationship with Christ, to be a follower of Christ. If you're here today and you already are a follower of Christ, then I'm asking you to start reevaluating your life. Are you just trying to live by the rules so you can get to heaven? Or are you trying to have an evolving faith so you can reach people? Because Jesus says there's two totally different things there. Because the rules, that makes you a Pharisee or a teacher of the law, you just never really got it. It's the faith, the idea that I'm reaching out of myself, that begins to help you understand what it means to have a relationship with Christ. We're going to pray, and then we're going to sing. Will you please stand?